Nick, what is one of your strangest off-grid experiences you've had? And I'm sure you've had a few.
I sure have. I guess one of the strangest must have been my visit to the Mennonites, the Old Order Mennonites, the Amish, in Kentucky. And I went to visit a guy who has the most successful engineering company. He's got a turnover of about $3 million a year, and they do not use electricity in this engineering company, which makes complex metal structures for industry in the Northeast. And so to generate power, they use horses. And I walked onto his ranch, and there was a horse on an escalator, basically. It was like a treadmill that they'd built out of wood, which they'd grown and cut themselves. And there was this horse walking on this treadmill. And the treadmill turned a lever, and the lever turned a motor in their cool box. They didn't have a fridge. They had like a large Coleman's cool box, which kept their meat and milk fresh. So that was probably the oddest single thing.
You have also had an experience writing about the Bilderbergs, the power elite groups, a lot of which, you know, I think are tied into this electrical mess we're in right now and power mess we're in. How did you get into that? How did you begin to investigate them?
I guess I spotted it as a phenomenon in the 80s. This was a long time ago. And I took the academic route. I'd been an academic in Washington, D.C. Excuse me. And a lot of the high-powered academics get invited to these meetings because they want the information that these guys and women have got. So I went and talked to academics who'd been there, and I was always asking the same question. What specific policies were specifically introduced or influenced by the Bilderberg and Trilateral Commission? And through the academics, I managed to get invited to some of the meetings and met some of these power brokers. I think I ran across David Rockefeller in the men's room at the Council on Foreign Relations. It was not a good career move, of course, but annoying some of the world's most powerful people didn't do me any favors.
No, not
but
at all.
I was pleased to be able to do it and expose some of the things they were up to.
That's probably why it wasn't a great career move. You exposed them. But, and they're out there. To some people, Nick, who would say, oh, come on, there's not a power elitist group out there. What would you say to them?
I'd say that it's just like, you know, in your hometown. You know, there's going to be a Rotary Club. There's going to be a little club somewhere for the guys that run the place where the local officials meet the local businessmen and keep everything cozy. And it's just like that at that level. It's all about access and networking. You know, if the head of GE has a tax problem, he doesn't sort of whine to his accountant. He goes and sees the Treasury Secretary.
Yeah.
But we can't do that.
No, we can't do that at all.
Nor is it transparent. You know, it's not very easy to find out that meeting has taken place or what was discussed.
What is their motive? What are they looking for? Control, power, more?
A combination of things. One thing they're looking for is to just cover up the incompetence of the entire system. It's just to kind of keep the whole edifice creaking along rather than accept that it's really not fit for purpose. I mean, at the moment, we've got a global financial system, which is like a giant Ponzi scheme where we're always mortgaging the future to pay for the present.
Yeah.
We've got an energy system. You know, I mean, everything is dependent upon our energy system, and the energy system is dependent upon foreign oil and a completely polluting and inefficient production and distribution network. So really, if you look at energy and finance, of course, they should be changed, but it's not in the interests of the people who currently run the system to change it. So they have to keep it creaking along. So really, I see these meetings as like crisis meetings, which take place in order to kind of keep patching the system, keep it going, and keep those in power, of course, or in power, because that's what they want. Is, as anybody would, if you're in power, you want to stay in power.
Do they want this to be long-lasting or just as long as they're still alive?
I could not really answer that. From my meetings with them, I'd say that they genuinely have both motives. You know, there is self-interest is the number one motive, but there is also a feeling that they would like to do some good in the world. Of course, we'd all love to do some good in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, when GE first started, back in, you know, the late 19th, early 20th century, the people who were running GE at the time, they created this system, the electrical system we now have, in order to further the profits of GE. But at the same time, they truly believed that what they were doing was setting up a more rational way, a more rational order, a more rational system. And in fact, they genuinely believed that really, if the government was run along the lines of GE, it would be a better world. Now, they believed it. They were sincere. That doesn't mean they were right.
True. Yet it all comes down to who's in charge. Did you like these people?
No, I didn't, actually. I mean, I did not warm to them, not one of them. I found them to be cold. I'm talking about today's, you know, today's right. Trilateralists or Bilderbergers. I found them on the whole to be cold and closed and not very spontaneous. You know, everything was very carefully guarded and there was no real openness. And that's what I would have liked to have seen, was some openness. Allowed into some of the meetings, but in a controlled way and only into certain parts of certain meetings.
Do you think they acted this way because you were around, or do you think that that's really who they are?
I think that's who they are. I mean, they're people who kind of, you know, walk around with a lot of secrets. And
They laugh at things we don't laugh about, I bet, Nick.
Yeah, you know? And scarlet things we laugh about.
Yeah.
I mean, this current thing with BP and
the oil tragedy,
this guy, Tony Hayward, is just the fool guy. I mean, he's only been there a short while.
Yeah, and they got him today.
He was foolish enough to put himself in the front line, which was a big mistake. But the real guy, I mean, BP are one of the main Bilderberg supporters. They finance something called the successor generation, which is the part of Bilderberg that looks to try and groom future leaders. And BP sponsors that. And the guy before Tony Hayward was John Brown, Lord Brown, who had to resign because he committed, because he committed perjury. So he had to resign as head of BP. But the British government has now brought him back as their cost-cutting expert, basically to create some other mess.
Jeez.
Because it's the cost-cutting at BP which has caused all this in the first place.
Is he working for government? Is he so well off he doesn't need a check? What's he doing?
Yes, to both of those. He's been brought into government, I think, on little or no pay. Instead of being brought in to clear up the BP mess, which would have been a very sensible job to give him.
Right, right.
They've brought him in to make the same mistakes he made at BP, but on behalf of the whole country.